in Matthew chapter 9, verses 35 through 38. And Jesus went about all the cities and villages, teaching in their synagogues and preaching the gospel of the kingdom, and healing every sickness and every disease among the people. But when he saw the multitudes, he was moved with compassion on them, because they fainted and were scattered abroad as sheep having no shepherd. Then saith he, Jesus, unto his disciples, the harvest truly is plenteous. Do you believe that? That the harvest truly, Jesus says, as if we might be inclined to doubt it, the harvest truly is plenteous, but the laborers are few. Pray ye therefore the Lord of the harvest that he will send forth laborers into his harvest. I want to just draw four lessons or thoughts from this, but if I were to give a title to the message this morning, it would be Pray for Laborers, Become a Laborer. The first lesson that I get from this little passage here is that only great intimacy will yield great sympathy. Only great intimacy will yield great sympathy. In verse 35, it was as Jesus taught and preached and healed that he was struck by the hugeness of the need. It was because he was so intimately acquainted with the people he was ministering to and among that he was seeing not only the greatness of the harvest that was potential, but also the greatness of the need. And I think only when we are intimately engaged in the lives of human beings around us that we will have a tremendous sympathy for the need that is there. Doubtless one reason that I don't feel Jesus' compassion for others is because I am not acquainted with others, not rubbing shoulders with the needy as regularly as Jesus was. That was the thing that was so shocking, even for his disciples and certainly for his critics, that this man who was supposed to be a leader was such a servant. This man who was supposed to be a king, presumably, if he was the Messiah, was touching sick people and ministering to them on a regular basis. Sinners, rubbing shoulders with them, eating with them. I mean, let me ask you this. When was the last time that you sat down and had dinner with notorious sinners? Now, I know we're all sinners. We know the doctrine of total depravity, perhaps, that every single human being is a sinner down deep. But I'm talking about notorious sinners. Jesus was constantly touching, rubbing shoulders with people, and therefore saw the greatness of the need. I was thrilled to have Brother Guna visit our church soon after he was here and give us a report on all his labors in the southern state in India of Tamil Nadu. And it was my hope that as we became more acquainted with the needs that he was showing us, even literally in a slideshow around the world, that we would feel a greater zeal to meet those needs. To realize that God did not give us our resources for our pleasure, but for His glory. And so the reason that I have, the things that I have, are not so that they can terminate in me, but so that I can use them for His glory and to minister to those around me. In verse 36, it says that when he, that is Jesus, saw the multitudes, he was moved with compassion on them. It was when he saw the people, when he looked them in the eyes, when he was close to them and acquainted with them, that he saw the need and felt the compassion. Have you ever noticed how easy it is, at least short term, how much easier it is emotionally to not look in the eyes of a homeless person who comes up to you and asks you for help. Maybe you just give them a dollar or whatever to ease your conscience, but you get away from them as quickly as possible. It was when Jesus saw them, when he looked at them, when he was able to see their need, that he felt the gut-wrenching compassion. In the original language, the root word actually has to do with your gut. This gut-wrenching compassion that Jesus felt. Our need, I say therefore, our need as followers of Jesus Christ, our need is to feel the need of others better and more, like Jesus did. Gut-wrenching compassion. We need to feel the need of those around us with greater intensity, with greater empathy, until it leads us, right? So if you're wondering, well, how will I know when I'm feeling the needs of others around me like I ought to? Until it leads us, feel the need of others around us, until it leads us to speak and act in response to them like our Savior did. We need to feel the needs of those around us, to view the needs of those around us, to see the needs of those around us until it sinks down to a gut-wrenching compassion that responds in meeting the needs that we see around us more consistently and faithfully. So only great intimacy, it's only when we're really rubbing shoulders with sinners that we'll have a tremendous burden for sinners. It's only when we are touching the needy that we'll be burdened for the needy. So only great intimacy will yield great sympathy. The second thing that I see here is that the greatest need of every person is a spiritual one, not a physical one. Now, the first way that I think we see this clearly in the passage is the fact that Jesus says to pray for laborers because the people don't have a shepherd. Not because they don't have handouts or because they're in need just physically, but he says he saw the people as sheep that didn't have a shepherd. Jesus saw the solution to the problem, in other words, as not just giving them stuff, but someone who was willing to truly minister to the whole people around them, not just hand them something to salve the conscience, but to minister to the whole person, soul, spirit, body. There was no shortage of leaders in Israel. There were Pharisees, there were Sadducees, there were pagan cult leaders. There were plenty of leaders. There just weren't any laborers. And so Jesus says, pray that the Lord of the harvest will send forth laborers into the harvest. What is needed, Jesus says, is shepherds who are willing to roll up their sleeves and truly commit to ministering to the people around them. This is one of the things that I thought about Brother Claude as I was thinking about him. What a remarkable impact he has had as a man who's simply willing to roll up his sleeves and help wherever he sees a need. There are more than just one or two men in this congregation who have expressed to me explicitly that their goal in their Christian life is to be like Brother Claude. And I think what a wonderful thing that is, knowing that Brother Claude has really never, ever sought any sort of position of leadership or attention or recognition. But he has been laboring so faithfully behind the scenes that it's impossible not to see how he's been meeting needs over and over and over again and through the years. And I'm thankful that there are men who see that and want to emulate that. Last night, Uncle Zach was giving us a charge, and he was saying, don't trust a minister who's not humble. And I would say something very parallel to that is, and that is, don't trust a laborer who's not, or a leader who's not willing to serve. And so we need laborers, not just leaders, not just people who are willing to get up and make a show of being impressive in front of people. We need people who are willing to serve in places where no one else cares and no one else is watching, and minister to people who nobody else cares about. So we first see it in the need for a shepherd, for laborers, that this great need is spiritual, not a physical one. But also we see it in the fact that as we look at a harmony of the Gospels, this actually has, this whole story has sort of a context to it. Now, as you may know, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John are the Gospels, but not all of them tell the narrative of Jesus' life in exact chronological order. Luke is by far the most careful, accurate historian. He's the one that almost always you can follow historically, chronologically. But the other gospel writers may connect different stories, not because of a chronological order, but because maybe a lesson that they're bringing or a theme that they're wanting to follow. Or maybe they just may leave out a story that another gospel writer is wanting to include. But as we make a harmony of the Gospels, it shows us that immediately before this scene that we see here when Jesus is healing and teaching is Jesus' last visit to his hometown of Nazareth. You know, Jesus of Nazareth. Jesus grew up in Nazareth. And as he ministered there, it says specifically that he did not do much healing or ministry among them because of their unbelief. He only heals a few people in Nazareth because of their unbelief. And so on a timeline of Bible chronological narrative, then the words we might say they're likely before our passage in Matthew 9, 35 through 38 are actually found in Mark 6, 6. And that is, and he, Jesus, marveled because of their unbelief. And he went around about the villages teaching. Now, so we see in Matthew 9:35, Jesus went about the cities and villages teaching in their synagogues and preaching the gospel of the kingdom and healing every sickness, right? Jesus healing. But that's not all that was happening. In fact, the main response to the need that Mark recalls and records for us is that Jesus, when he saw the need, taught. The greatest need was not a need for physical supplies, but a need for the gospel of Jesus Christ. And so he went about preaching the gospel, teaching those who were around him as the great and primary solution to the needs that he saw. This is important to recognize. The great need is a spiritual one, not a physical one, because otherwise we will be like so many of our day that think the great need of people is for food or clothing or medical attention or other things. Those are real needs, and Jesus meets those people where their needs are, but that is not their great need. And if we make this mistake of thinking the great need of people is for food and clothing, medical attention and so on, in doing so, we might also not realize, not recognize the gaping need, the wandering sheep in pinstripe suits working downtown, or pulling into Costco moms in their SUVs, or laughing loudly in a nice restaurant over drinks. We might be impressed by those who are succeeding in their athletic tournaments, or not see the need of those who are making straight A's in the classroom. And in fact, we might even begin to envy them. We might even begin to think they have what we need, rather than the other way around. Rather than seeing unbelievers as spiritually bankrupt, to be ministered to, as Jesus saw. He saw their unbelief. He marveled at it. And so he began to teach them. Rather than seeing unbelievers as spiritually bankrupt to be ministered to, we might even begin to consider worldly success a thing to be envied or emulated. yes, the physical must be met for many. Many people do have physical needs so that they know that we love them, right? The only way that people will believe that we care about them is if we care for them. We can't just walk in and start telling them all the things we know that they don't. We have to be willing to serve them faithfully in ways that they know they have needs so that perhaps they'll believe us also when we tell them of other needs they have. So yes, the need is physical for many so that they'll know we love them with the message that we bring, but it is the message we bring that is most needed. I love when Brother Guna comes to our church because it's always a sweet challenge. One thing that is always marvelous is to see how this one man, if you're not familiar with his ministry, is doing things all over the place, ministering through him and his labors and those who labor with him in various orphanages, in medical clinics, mobile medical clinics that they'll take out into the community. The fact that they will have tuition centers, sewing centers that teach women how to sew so they can make a livelihood. Recently, they inaugurated, while a group from our church was there, a community college, which was a tremendous need there. Many of the women, if they graduate from high school and don't have any further education or training, are basically homeless, poverty-stricken if they don't marry some man who is going to be able to provide for them. So this community college trains men and women, giving them the things they need in order to be able to just make a living. And so that is all impressive. But what's really impressive is that in every single one of these things, he is using it as a platform to preach the gospel. To recognize that this is not their great need, is not education, it's not medical attention, it's not even caring for orphans. The great need of orphans is not parents. The great need of orphans is the gospel of Jesus Christ. And it's always challenging because we try to then sit down afterwards and say, how can we emulate what Brother Guna is doing there? And there's lots of things you can't, right? No telling what the government would do to us if we started a medical clinic in our community, just started giving shots to people with no, real license or anything. You can't emulate all that. But it does make me ask myself this question. How can we minister to the needs of those in our community in order to be able to have a platform to share the gospel successfully with them? It's no accident that Jesus inseparably connects preaching the gospel with healing. And we want to separate them constantly. We'd like to either just heal and not get into all that touchy stuff that makes it awkward when you bring up Jesus. Or we'd just like to talk about Jesus and not have to touch the dirty people. But Jesus inseparably connects this great physical need with the greatest need that is spiritual. And so the greatest need of every person is a spiritual, not physical one. Jesus marveled at their unbelief and so went around about the villages teaching, preaching the gospel, and yes, healing. The third is that the only real solution for the problem that Jesus saw and that we see if we open our eyes even for a moment around us, the only real solution must come from God. This is why Jesus says we must pray. We can't hope to make any impact without God's amazing grace, without God's enabling spirit, without God's daily direction. We can't possibly have any success in this thing. In other words, we can't just say, OK, I'm going to set up a good fundraising machine and I'm going to get all the online donations that I can. And we're going to take care of world hunger. No, the need must, if it is primarily a spiritual one, must be met by God. And that's why the very practical Jesus, who is touching the wounds of the people, gives the very practical solution. Pray. Now, don't just say to yourself, oh, OK, I'll pray and not meet the needs. But we must pray so that the needs will be met. And the last thing is, part of God's solution is you. The only real solution must come from God, but part of God's solution is you. It's almost humorous to me to just think about, to read this passage without the chapter divisions, without the verse divisions, and see how Jesus says in verse 38, "Pray ye therefore for the Lord of the harvest that he will send forth laborers into his harvest." And you can see the prayer warriors among them bowing their heads and saying, "Yes, Lord, send laborers." And even the really faithful among them putting it into their prayer journals and saying, "Yes, Lord, I'm going to pray daily for laborers for the harvest." And as they raise their eyes from their prayer together, it says, "And when he had called his disciples unto him, he commissioned them." He commissioned them in Matthew 10:7 with, guess what? "And as ye go, preach, saying, the kingdom of heaven is at hand. Heal the sick." You do what I have been doing. I have been preaching the gospel. I've been healing. Now you go and you preach the gospel and you heal. So as they've been praying for laborers, they look up from their prayers and Jesus says, "Congratulations, you're the answer to your prayers. I'm calling you to now go. I see the need. I tell you, pray. And now I send you out in the recognition that only with God will you have success. And yet with God you will have success. And so you must now go. Go preaching the gospel and healing those around you." Jesus's miracles were simply a visible tip of the iceberg display, indication of his exalting every valley, as it was prophesied that he would do, and bringing every mountain low for the salvation of his people. This is his work. It's his harvest. Jesus says, "Pray that the Lord of the harvest will send forth laborers into his harvest." It's his harvest. But the harvest is truly plentiful. "Pray, therefore, that the Lord of the harvest will send forth laborers into his harvest." Recognizing that part of God's solution, part of God's answer to that prayer is you, if you are a believer in Jesus Christ. As we go, showing compassion, meeting every need, ministering to the people as whole people, recognizing, yes, they have physical needs, but their great need is Jesus Christ. We share the gospel wherever we go in the command that Jesus has given us. May we be faithful laborers. May we be prayerful laborers to the glory of God. May God bless you.